father had told me, to fit their expectations so snugly that they couldn't possibly think to complain. Perhaps that was right. But I couldn't continue like this. I needed answers, and I needed to act, to be myself, and to fight for my own solutions. My gut told me to march straight to my laboratory and start work there, but my lab was a couple of miles away, far out of reach. Or that lab was out of reach. I turned to my guards. The gray-bearded man wasn't on duty, but I recognized the younger dark-haired man and a blonde girl not much older than myself. Both of them wore the dark blue coat of the guard, still bearing the old king's insignia. I needed one of my own. "I want to set up a laboratory," I said. "Do you know anywhere in the castle I could use?" The black-haired guard frowned. "I am sure there will be somewhere, Your Majesty." "It needs a fireplace, and sturdy tables and cupboards, some sort of ventilation, and it would need to be in a place I wouldn't be disturbed." "Your Majesty, if I may?" The blonde guard hesitated. "I know of a room, but what? Where is it?" "Well," the guard said, as though her words might offend me, "this castle used to house the kingdom's most dangerous enemies, when such things were a threat." "I know. Well, Your Majesty, there is a room. It hasn't been used for 100 years now, and no one will go near it. But the room is used to interrogate prisoners, and it has, well, it has all the things you require." "You mean a torture chamber? I'm sorry, Your Majesty, I know it is a bold idea, but it has all the things you need, and I thought, yes," I said. "Yes, it's a good idea." A gory past couldn't hurt, as long as it definitely was past. The kingdom had considered torture barbaric for a century at least, and if other people were disturbed by the memory, they'd be less likely to visit and disturb me. "Could you take me?" The guard led me deep underneath the castle, where the stone dripped and the only light came from iron braziers that stuck out every few feet. The walls pressed even closer here, and the air felt heavy and old. "It's here, Your Majesty," the guard said, gesturing toward a wooden door. "But I'm not certain. Is it locked?" "No, Your Majesty, no need." Her expression suggested that no one in their right mind would ever sneak in, which made it perfect for me. "Thank you." I grabbed the handle and then paused. "I'm sorry, I don't know your name." It hurt to ask it. Even that question made me feel like I'd reached out too far. But we'd be spending time together now, and she'd helped me. I had to try. "I'm Mila Erickson, Your Majesty," she said with a bow. "I'm sorry, I should have introduced myself earlier." No, I should have asked. I turned to the black-haired guard. And you?"
"Reynold Milson, Your Majesty."
"Thank you. It's good to meet you. Even though we've already met, it's good to... thank you." I bit my lip, as though I could shove the babble back into my mouth. Then I turned and pushed the door. It stuck slightly in the frame, and when it finally shifted, it let loose a cloud of dust. I coughed and waved it away. The room beyond was large and square. Its uneven floor was spattered with suspicious-looking stains. But it was spacious enough, with a fireplace, a large table in the middle of the room, and many cupboards around the sides. Strange devices hung from some of the walls, and jars cluttered the cupboard tops. I'd need to wear a good pair of gloves when I investigated those, and possibly a mask. Who knew what poisons they might contain? This is good. It needed cleaning up, of course, and I'd need to move in my own supplies, but I could work with this. I turned back to Mila. "Find someone to come clean this place tonight, but don't let them touch any of the cupboards or the jars. Just sweep the floor, clear out the cobwebs. I'll need some wood for the fireplace, too. And I need someone to go to my house and fetch my things for me. The books, the vials, the bottles, the flasks. I'll make up a list, or I can go." I glanced at Mila. "No, I can't go, but you can go. Now, please. I'm not supposed to leave you unguarded, Your Majesty." She could leave, in theory. The guards had always followed the king and queen's commands, including making themselves scarce, if need be. But Mila clearly thought any such order would be unwise right now, and she was probably right after all that had happened.
Then someone else can go, I said. I looked around the room again, already imagining it transformed. It would be perfect, larger than my old laboratory, and safer for storing my more dangerous ingredients. I could definitely work with this. Please, I said, find out for me? Of course, Your Majesty. Mila bowed and stepped out of the room.
Would you prefer me to wait inside the room or outside it, Your Majesty?
Reynolds said. Outside. The idea of being watched while I explored made me feel far too self-conscious. Please. Once he had closed the door, I walked over to the nearest set of jars. They were coated with dust. Anything potent in there might have lost its power years ago, but maybe... I wiped a finger along the counter, leaving a line in the dust. Perhaps it would be better if I cleaned this place myself, so no one could disturb anything. I picked up one of the jars and held it up to the light. Someone had written something on it once, but it had faded half away. Whatever it contained, it was almost certainly unpleasant. Something that poisoned, something that burned, something that would convince a victim to reveal all their secrets. I explored the rest of the room carefully, looking through drawers, mostly empty, but a few pairs of tongs remained, and mentally cataloging whatever I could. I couldn't wait for the messengers to return with my things. I definitely couldn't wait for someone else to clean up the space. I needed it now. Needed to research, to create something that was mine once again. I grabbed a cloth and began to dust. 10. I spent hours in my new laboratory, sorting through its secrets. My silk dress was quickly covered in dust and years of untouched grime, and I didn't think I'd ever get the bloodstain off the table, but the space was good, and I'd begun to catalog the strange jars around the room. Many of them contained the remnants of herbs with healing properties, not what I had been expecting. I suppose you couldn't have your prisoner dying of blood poisoning before you had all the information you needed, or at least before you got the chance to kill them yourself. Other jars contained far more expected chemicals. A few poisons, liquids that burned, a powder that, when mixed with water, was good for getting blood off the skin. Someone knocked on the door. Your Majesty? It was Reynold Milson, the black-haired guard.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you intended to see Rasmus Holt at 3.
I wiped my hands on my skirt. Holt was supposed to be teaching me more about being queen, or at least more about how he thought I should be queen. Traditions and presentation, how to speak, and how to think. He might have a chance with the first two, but no amount of speaking lessons were going to help the rest. Even if he gave me a script for every encounter, it would all fall apart the moment someone else spoke. "What time is it now?" I said.
3, Your Majesty.
I looked down at my dust-covered dress. I'd wanted to make an impression on my council, but this wasn't exactly what I'd had in mind. I hurried to the door, where Reynold and Mila waited, one on either side. At least they didn't comment on my appearance.
"I've sent the order for your things, Your Majesty," Mila said, "but it may take a couple of days, for reasons of security."
"Thank you," I said. They led me out of the dungeons and up to the 3rd floor of the fort, but someone stepped out of a doorway as we turned the corner, missing collision by inches.
Oh!
It was Madeline Wolf. She took a tiny step back, but even when startled, her mask of courtesy did not slip. She glanced at my grimy gown as she swept into a curtsy.
Your Majesty, are you all right?
Of course Madeline Wolf would be the one to collide with me when I looked like this. I forced myself to smile back at her.
Yes, I said. Yes, I'm fine. I'm sorry. I wasn't looking where I was going.
No, Your Majesty, it was my fault. What was I even supposed to say? I was already late, and the awkwardness was a physical presence between us.
I'm sorry. I have to... Wait.
Madeline grabbed my hand.
I wanted to speak to you, to thank you. For saving me yesterday? I would be dead if it wasn't for you.
I didn't deserve her thanks. She had only been in danger because of me. If she hadn't spoken to me, she would have never picked up one of the tarts in the first place. I shook my head, scrambling for words, and she squeezed my hand.
I'm grateful, she said. Truly. I'm just glad you're all right. Madeline beamed. There was one other thing. Your Majesty, I know now might not be the best time, but it's not really a matter I wish to bring up in front of the court. What is it? There's an orphanage in the city. I've been supporting it for years, but, well, it's struggling, Your Majesty. I hoped you might be willing to visit it with me. They would love to see you. That would be... I'm not sure it's safe. Of course, Your Majesty. Things are so uncertain now. But please consider it. Perhaps when things are more settled, it would mean a lot to me to know you might be thinking of them. All right, I said. When things are safer. I know it seems odd, Madeline said, leaning closer, bringing this up now when you have so much to deal with, but it's very important to me, Your Majesty, and I hope things like this will also be important to you. She curtsied again and stepped aside for me and my guards to pass. I nodded at her, no idea what else to do. She seemed so earnest, but why would she bring that up now, in the corridor, whispered in my ear? The strangeness of it made me shiver. But I had to hurry on. I was already stupidly late. When I reached Holt's door, I knocked without pausing to catch my breath. Come in! I'm sorry I'm late, I said as I swung through the door. That's quite all right, Your Majesty, Holt said. A queen is not capable of being late. He smiled as he rose from his chair. He'd settled into his new office quickly, with papers already covering his desk, and rows of books lining the walls. His smile caught slightly as he took in my appearance. Your Majesty, is something wrong? No, I said. I batted at my dress, as though that would make the grime vanish, but it only sent a cloud into Holt's otherwise spotless room. I was cleaning. We have servants for that, Your Majesty. He sounded rather bemused. I didn't want to risk them, I said. He wouldn't consider my laboratory very queenly, but he also couldn't forbid me from using it, not with my title behind me. Advise against it, perhaps, but not forbid. And my secret was hardly a secret, with servants fetching supplies and me running around covered in 100-year-old dust. I was cleaning out a space in the basement. The word dungeon felt too ominous. To use as a laboratory, for my studies. I cringed slightly, expecting Holt's frown of disapproval, but he simply nodded. Ah, yes. Your father told me you're quite the scholar. It should come in useful in the days ahead. And you intend to continue your studies here, in the fort? There's no rule against it. No, no, Holt said. Of course not. An intellectual queen. It is certainly a change, but it will be a welcome one, I think. And you plan to work on the test for poison that you mentioned in our meeting. It's the right thing to do. Oh, I agree with you, Your Majesty. If it can be done, it should be done. He smiled, and the look was almost grandfatherly. Although, there will be other factors to consider. Shall we sit? I nodded. Being a taster pays well, Your Majesty. A test would deny people work. They might not thank you for it. They might not thank me for their lives. I am not saying it is a bad idea, Your Majesty. It would be a valuable tool, but we do not force anyone to become a taster. They assess the risks themselves, and they consider them worthwhile. But they must be desperate if they continue now, after two different attacks. There were choices, and then there were choices. People could say everything is a choice, with as much haughtiness and superiority as they liked, but that didn't mean desperate people wouldn't take a third option if they could. No one would choose that if they really had another option. We should develop a test, and we should find other jobs for people, so they do not need to risk their lives for me. Indeed, Your Majesty. It is a good thought. I just wished to remind you that a good queen should consider all the options and all the potential consequences. Situations are rarely as simple as they first appear. Consider things complexly, Your Majesty. It always helps. Then why didn't you support me in the meeting? I said,
the words bursting out of me without thought, when the others were speaking against me. As much as I dislike it, they were right that we do not have the resources to spend at the moment when so much else is at risk. We have to put your safety first. But if a test were to appear, well, it would be a good thing. Don't you agree? After that, he talked through the etiquette of the court, rules I should have known, rules I'd never imagined before, which fork to use for every possible dish at a banquet, how to greet different people of rank, the different tiers of nods and curtsies, depending on what one wished to be conveyed. He didn't actually demonstrate the curtsies, but he described them in minute detail and commented as I practiced, correcting the slightest shift in my posture. When I wasn't bobbing around the room, I took frantic notes, desperate to cram every scrap of detail into my brain. It had all seemed completely pointless to me before, and a part of me still wanted to laugh at all this meaningless ritual now. But the nobles expected it, and I had to appease them. I had to cling to the things that they knew. And I had very little time to learn. The funerals would take place in a few days, which meant two incredibly awkward banquets. One the night before, to welcome everyone who had traveled to the city, and one afterward, to commemorate the dead. And that speech, of course. I didn't want to think about that. Holt, however, clearly considered it a priority. He handed me a copy of their current draft for my comments. It all seemed fine to me, as diplomatic and bland as I could imagine, and I ran through it once or twice with Holt, tripping over the words. Just reading it in front of Holt was enough to make my heart race. I couldn't possibly recite it in front of the entire new court. But Holt was surprisingly patient. "I remember my first speeches," he said with a smile. "I was terrible, Your Majesty. I wrote and memorized them myself, but I still stumbled over the words. You'll do well, Your Majesty. We just need to practice, develop your confidence." I couldn't imagine ever being more confident. "Do not worry, Your Majesty," Holt said. "Etiquette matters, yes, but you do not need to attempt to emulate our departed queen, and you must not emulate our king. The Forgotten protect his soul. So much has changed. Perhaps it is best to embrace that." I paused. "What do you mean?" "King Jorgen. I do not wish to speak ill of him, of course. And he guided us in his own way. But so much has changed now. Perhaps it is time for something new. Less waste, Your Majesty. Less show. More heart." But without all the rules and rituals, what did I have left? Just me, hiding beneath 20 layers of skirts. Perhaps Madeline could act naturally and show her heart, but only because her heart was what everyone wanted to see. Not me. My father thinks I should try and... what had it been? Try to make things smoother. Make it so people don't feel the difference between my reign and the previous one. But of course they'll feel the difference. As painful as it is for all of us to admit, almost everything about the old court is gone. And this is an opportunity, Your Majesty. A great one. The Forgotten have given us a chance. We must not waste it. The Forgotten, I swallowed. You think they wanted everyone to die? Not that, Your Majesty. But perhaps it was more than coincidence that you were not in the palace when the poison was served. I can see their hands in that, guiding the situation as they desired, helping us to help ourselves. As though the Forgotten would have guided the kingdom toward me. But Holt seemed sincere. Do you really think they can still influence things? They are divine, Your Majesty. They are not constrained by the laws of this world, as we are. Yes, they are gone physically, but their influence remains. I thought they chose to leave. Why would they keep influencing things here if they wanted to be gone? They left because we failed them. We did not deserve their presence. but they want us to be worthy. We have been climbing toward worthiness for hundreds of years, away from ambition, away from war, from all the brutal darkness of our past. But we were still extravagant, selfish, and wasteful, and they cannot abide that. So perhaps, Your Majesty, they chose you as a different type of queen, one they could support, one who could make Epria into a land they could return to again. If the Forgotten were really all-seeing divine beings, they would have chosen someone better than me. Even Holt had to see that. Did he really believe all he was saying, or was it a comforting lie he was telling himself, to reason away so many deaths, to make my cluelessness seem like a gift and not the result of a senseless tragedy? If he believed it, it probably meant I could trust him. And if he didn't, "I hope you're right," I said. "I hope this all goes somewhere good."
"It will, Your Majesty, as long as you remember that the Forgotten chose you. You, not King Jorgen, not his brother, not even the delightful Madeline Wolfe. They value your strengths, and so should you."
My strengths had nothing to do with being queen, but I nodded. He had faith in me, at least. That was more than most people had. It was more than I could honestly say for myself. Then I let out a breath, steeling myself. "I need you to help me. Please. I need a list of everyone at the banquet, everyone who died, everyone who survived. I should know all I can about the remaining court. Shouldn't I?" He nodded.
"Of course, Your Majesty. Your concern does you credit. I will see that it is done.
And then, could you get me a copy of Gustav's book? My strength is with research, and if I can understand..." He held up a hand.
"That, Your Majesty, I cannot do. I certainly do not have a copy, and I do not believe it would help. These people now calling themselves Gustavites, their beliefs are a corruption of a corruption, far detached from the man's original views. They use the memory of his words to serve their own ends, and hope people will not see the flaws in their logic. Here, let me see."
He pulled one of his desk drawers open and shuffled through the contents.
"Yes."
He pulled out a weather-battered pamphlet and handed it to me. I took one glance at it, and my fingers tightened around the paper, bile rising to the back of my throat. It was cheaply printed, the lines thick and blurry, but the imagery was unmistakable. The king lay on the ground, gold piled around him, a spilled goblet rolling from his hand. The queen lay next to him, with a line across her throat that must have been blood, and I stood on top of them, pressing them into the ground, dripping with jewels, sipping from a goblet of my own. "Kill the corruption," it said at the top. Below the picture, more words had been hastily printed, calling the court and my rule an affront to the Forgotten, rallying against the wickedness it claimed we spread through the kingdom.
"Where did you get this?" "They've been scattered around the city. We don't know who actually distributed them. But you see, Freya, their views aren't based on reason. They aren't based on anything."
"These are all over the city?"
"Some parts of it, yes. We have destroyed any we've found, and we are increasing security, of course, adding more patrols and searching the printing presses. We will stop them."
"But sending guards after these people wouldn't stop what they believed. They hated me, hated all of us. Even if we found their presses, found them, their ideas would hold." I tightened my grip on the paper, bending it.
"Don't worry, Your Majesty," Holt said. "We will find them."
We spent another hour going over etiquette and rules, but Holt's enthusiasm waned as he discussed every showy ritual, like he did not really believe in it. Eventually, he called the session complete and I stood.
"Thank you," I said, "for all your help." He nodded, and I began to walk toward the door.
"Your Majesty,
If I may offer you another piece of advice?
He sounded tentative. I paused, turned back.
Be wary of William Fitzroy.
Fitzroy. I've barely ever spoken to him. The last words we'd exchanged had been outside the banquet hall on the day of my coronation. He was hardly eager to befriend me.
Perhaps not, Holt said, but it would be wise to keep it that way. Fitzroy has always been popular, and he is a dangerous element here.
You think he's dangerous?
He is the old king's son. Closer to him in blood than you, regardless of the law. If he decides that he wishes to take the throne, he could be quite a powerful enemy.
I remembered Fitzroy's words that night at the funeral and shivered. You don't belong here. But he had seemed to be grieving, even in his aggression. They hadn't been the words of a murderer. Thank you, I said softly. I'll keep that in mind. 11. The sound of Naomi's singing echoed through my chambers. Her voice was softer than usual, sadder, but determined. Some people sang when they were happy, but Naomi sang when she didn't want to think, letting the lyrics block any words of her own. I peeked through her bedroom doorway to find her hanging dresses in the wardrobe, hair tucked behind her ears. There were three open trunks in the middle of the room. Her other possessions must finally have arrived from her house in the city.
Hi, Naomi, I said as I slipped through the door. She smiled.
Hello, Your Majesty.
That had better be a joke, I said, as I walked to the nearest trunk, because if you start calling me that, seriously, I'm going to have to reconsider our friendship.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Majesty. I didn't know I wasn't allowed to address you properly.
I'm not above killing you, if necessary. I get enough of that from everyone else. Naomi paused, smile frozen on her face, and I suddenly realized what I'd said.
I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. It's all right, she said, but her voice was fainter than before.
I know what you meant. I opened my mouth to reply, but I had no idea what to say. I was saved by a rather demanding meow from the doorway. Dagny strutted in, her tail held high. She spared a second to rub against my legs before hopping into Naomi's open trunk of dresses.
Dagny!
I hurried to sweep her up. She's so rude.
As long as she's comfy in there, Naomi said.
She'll get hair everywhere. Having a fluffy cat was only fun until you realized that the fluff didn't actually stay on the cat. Absolutely everything ended up covered in gray hair when Dagny passed by.
Well, maybe we can start a new court fashion, Naomi said. A better way to wear fur.
She reached to take Dagny from me and held her against her shoulder like a baby.
What's that you've got there?
She said, nodding toward the speech I still clutched in my hand while she swayed Dagny back and forth.
A speech.
I smoothed it out and held it up, as though I hadn't already read it through about 47 times. Holt gave it to me, for when all the nobles get here.
So is that where you were today?
People were talking. Not to me, but I heard them, while I was eating. They were wondering why you were hiding. I wasn't hiding, I said, more forcefully than I intended. I was studying with Holt for some of the day, and I was setting up my new laboratory in the dungeons.
New laboratory?
Naomi's whole face brightened. To work on the poison detector. I nodded.
You should have fetched me. I would have helped.
I'm sorry. I just got so overexcited with the idea. Naomi laughed.
Yes, I know what you're like.
Dagny wriggled, so Naomi set her back in the trunk. Dagny leaped away, kicking the dresses for emphasis. Naomi sank onto the ground by the trunk, her skirts poofing up around her. I heard from my parents today. Her tone made clear that it wasn't good news. A letter from Naomi's parents was rarely ever good news. I sat down beside her.
Oh? What did they say?
She reached into another chest and began to pick out books, lining them up on the floor beside her. They aren't coming.
What?
They won't come to the capital. Not even for the funerals.
My father would struggle, and my mother, well, you know what she's like. I think she blames the court for my brother's death. She doesn't want to see it.
She let out a long breath, eyes closed, then shook her head. They've asked for Jacob's body to be sent to them in the country. I'm supposed to travel back, too.
Will you go?
She shook her head again.
I should, but I don't know. I want to stay here. I haven't been back there in years. It'd be too strange now.
And Jacob, you know he hated it there. He never got along with them. It'll be so strange.
She sucked in a breath through her teeth. And I want to remember him properly, as he was, not as he'll be during... as he is now.
She straightened the books with shaking hands. I need to be here, so that's what I'll do. Maybe I'll find something to include in the funerals for him.
He would have liked that.
More than going home.
He was lucky to have you, you know, as his sister.
I was lucky to have him.
She stroked Dagny, her hand running along her tail.
Will a lot of people be coming for the funerals?
Almost everyone, I think. If I knew little about the members of the old court, I knew nothing about the nobles outside the city, the ones who survived by being hundreds of miles away. Some were older family members who preferred to let the younger generation charm the king. Some had been disliked by the king, and some held the court in disdain, or lived far enough away that they ruled their land almost as kings of their own, as long as the real ruler did not think to check on them. All but the most stubborn or unwell would be traveling to attend the old king's funeral and see their new queen. I shifted forward to consider the books.
How do you want to organize these? Alphabetically?
Let's sort them by genre, then size, then color, perhaps?
I laughed. That's not very efficient, but it'll look good on the shelves.
I wasn't much help. To me, most of Naomi's books were just novels. To her, they had mountains of nuance, and each tiny subcategory had its own space in her visualized shelving system. But it was fun to guess each book's category as I passed them to her, getting more and more specific and ridiculous with every try. It made Naomi smile, at least.
We were interrupted by a knock on the door. I opened it to see Reynold Milson holding a sealed envelope.
A message for you, Your Majesty, from Rasmus Holt.
Thank you.
Of course, Your Majesty.
He bowed, and I had to stop myself from curtsying back.
What is it? Naomi asked after the guard bowed again and strode back to his post.
I turned the envelope over. It was sealed with red wax and stamped with an eagle crossed with swords. I still didn't have a seal of my own, something else my advisors were probably worrying about. My father had one, a bolt of cloth representing his old trade and the star of nobility, but it wouldn't suit a queen. I needed to stand for something before I could have a seal of my own. I needed a message to send. The paper inside was heavy and slightly stiff, and it was covered in writing. Name after name, well over 500 of them. The list of guests at the banquet. Most had been crossed out. The rest were marked with stars or small X's. The king's name was at the top, crossed out, and the queen, and his brother's son, all gone. My own name was far down the list, with a star beside it, the mark of a survivor then, while Sophia Thorne's name had an X. Deaths, survivors, and absentees. If this was the official guest list, it wouldn't include anyone who showed up uninvited. I flicked to the back page, in case any names had been added and crossed out, but there were no other marks.
Why has Holt sent that to you?
For my investigation, I said. My advisors think the Gustavites were responsible, but it doesn't quite add up. I thought we could look through the lists of guests at the banquet. Maybe there's something suspicious there.
Makes sense, Naomi said. I'll grab some paper.
While she walked over to the desk, I scanned the list again. Nothing stood out, They were just names, after all. But we needed to investigate them, find out what they had done that night. Some must have survived because they were lucky, but some may have known what was happening, and some may have been spared for a reason. I didn't know much about most of the people listed here, but the same few names stood out. Torsten Wolf, the king's best friend, and first in line of the survivors who had been at the ball. William Fitzroy, the king's rejected son. Rasmus Holt, the new head advisor. The conspicuously absent Madeline Wolf. Naomi sat down on the floor beside me with a pile of paper and two pens. We split the pages between us and wrote the name of a survivor at the top of each one. The list seemed much longer when laid out across the floor, 24 pages total. Fitzroy had been the highest ranked to survive. Then me, then Sten, then Naomi. The rest were nobles much further down the line of succession, or not in line at all. My advisors, a few young courtiers even more insignificant than me, and a great aunt who always had a disapproving glare. "Do you think they were definitely a guest? The murderer, I mean," Naomi asked. "I don't know." It would have given them an easy way into the event, and something of an alibi if they were caught sneaking around. But a servant was probably involved, too, to have access to the kitchens. That meant someone could have ordered the attack and still kept their distance. I inserted pages for Madeline, for the Gustavites, for the vague and nebulous cook and kitchen staff and tasters, before Naomi and I started to add to each page. Everything we knew about the person, the people close to them who had died, their relationship with the court, their behavior since the banquet. Naomi had a lot more to contribute than I did. She noticed the details. That her great-aunt Katrina doted on Elva's twin children and could never have wanted to kill them. That Carolina had looked rather green for most of the evening. That this person and that person had been caught up in a fight. My observations were mostly restricted to gossip I'd overheard, not exactly reliable, and what I'd seen since we moved to the fort. Dagny kept batting the pens away every time we put them down, so Naomi started balling up spare pieces of paper and throwing them for her. So far, two crystal jars and one silk bed hanging had been damaged by her frantic pursuit of these new makeshift toys, but at least it kept her from troubling us. And watching her tear around the room made Naomi smile.
"We're going to need to talk to everyone," Naomi said quietly, as she watched Dagny chase the fifth paper ball under the wardrobe. It was pretty much the last thing I wanted to do. We'd not only need to speak to people, we'd need to charm them, challenge them, guide the truth out of them, judge them on their stories and their excuses. But I could do this. I could speak to people. I'd spoken to Holt and to Madeline. I'd stayed calm when the city was in chaos. I could cope with this. It was too important for me to shrink away, to hide behind Naomi and hope the answers would appear out of the air. It was just another problem, another question to unpick. I could do it. "Then where should we start?" I tapped my fingers on the pages. "My advisors blame the Gustavites, but we can't exactly go out and interview them. If we had that book, or more of their propaganda. But my advisors are very determined for me not to see any of that." "But they're not determined to keep me away," Naomi said. "So that'll be my task tomorrow. I'll see what I can do."
"You're brilliant," I said. "You know that, right?" She shrugged.
"I guess it's been said, once or twice."
But that left me with interviewing duties. At least people couldn't refuse to meet with me, like they might with Naomi. Even spending time with a suspect might make things clearer. Sten's name seemed to glare at me from the page, challenging me to question him. But that conversation in the library had unsettled me. He seemed to suspect me, genuinely, truly. The murderer wouldn't do that. I'd speak to someone else first, ease myself into the investigation. I scanned across the row of names again, and my eyes settled on William Fitzroy. not technically in the line of succession, but close to the king. He had always been in the center of court. Even if he was innocent, he must have something useful to tell. Some secret to uncover. All right, I said. Tomorrow. Tomorrow, we'd begin. 12. The odds of finding Fitzroy alone seemed pretty slim, so I needed to exert some of that queen-like authority and summon him. I could hardly go into the makeshift throne room for this, so I strode down to my half-furnished laboratory. Perhaps a meeting in an ex-torture chamber would startle some honesty out of him. If my guards were surprised by my request, they didn't show it. One of them disappeared to deliver the message, and I waited by the far cupboard, trying to figure out what I was going to say. 10 handshaking minutes later, my guard knocked on the door again. "William Fitzroy, Your Majesty." I turned. Fitzroy stepped into the room. Gone was his rumpled, grief-racked look. His blonde waves were swept back with casual confidence, and his blue eyes were alert again, like nothing had changed. He looked princely, and, for a moment, he stared me down, like he was challenging my place. I stared back at him, forcing myself to meet his gaze, my heart pounding. Then he offered me a shallow bow. "Your Majesty," he said, "to what do I owe the pleasure?" "William Fitzroy, courtier extraordinaire. Why should I be afraid of him when he'd never had a serious thought in his life?" "He was serious when you saw him in the corridor," a voice in me said, "when he told you you didn't belong." I stepped forward. My heels wobbled beneath me. "Fitzroy, I wanted to talk to you."
"I gathered that."
He moved farther into the room, letting the door swing closed behind him.
"This is an unusual meeting place, Your Majesty, unless you're planning to torture me."
"No." The word shot out of me, and I blushed. "This is my lab," I said, forcing myself to sound confident, in control. "There's not a lot of choice for space in the fort."
"Oh, so you're planning to experiment on me."
He strode past me, elbow brushing mine, to peer at the jars lined up on the cupboard tops. "Hemlock? Arsenic?
What are you doing down here?"
"Those were already here." More words rushing out before I could stop them. Why was I letting him unsettle me? From before.
"Strange that the labels haven't faded at all in 100 years, and the bottles are so clean. They must have been blessed by the Forgotten, don't you think?"
"I suppose they must." I'd been an idiot to hope he'd be anything other than mocking and rude, considering what I knew of him. His friends always loved to make people like me feel small. "I'm studying them."
"To see if they're poisonous? Because I'm pretty certain they are."
And this was the problem with William Fitzroy, or one of them at least. I was supposed to be interrogating him, yet somehow here he was, guiding the conversation, putting me on the defensive. I wouldn't let him do it this time. "I'm trying to find a way to test for the presence of arsenic, as a way to replace tasters." He paused. Whatever he had been expecting, it hadn't been that.
"Do you think you can do it?"
I didn't hesitate.
"Yes."
He clearly hadn't been expecting that, either. He watched me for a long moment, and I felt a rush of victory. He must have known he'd lost that round, because he shifted his weight and shifted the conversation.
"So, Your Majesty, why have you summoned me to your torture chamber laboratory? I assume it wasn't for my winning conversation."
"Obviously." He grinned, and I let out a breath. "I just wanted to talk to you." I ran my hands along the side of the table, letting the movement distract me. "We haven't spoken yet."
Not since I shouted at you in the corridor?"
He ran his fingers through his hair, rumpling the curls.
"That was rude of me."
I stared at him. Had he just admitted to a fault? And a social fault, at that? It had to be some sort of trick to throw me off balance again. That wasn't an apology.
"Oh," he said, "let me try again."
He knelt before me, his head bowed, and I scurried backward a step.
"Your Majesty, I am grievously sorry for the insult I have caused you. I throw myself upon your mercy."
He was awful. I shouldn't have expected anything else. My fingertips tingled, the first hints of panic, but I clenched my fists. I wouldn't let that control me today. "Don't make fun of me." He looked up, lips parted slightly.
"I was joking."
"You weren't joking." I turned away, counting the length of my breaths. 3 beats in, 4 beats out. Calm. He stood again.
"I was trying to joke. I didn't mean to upset you."
"You didn't mean to upset me, but you meant to make fun of me." Of course he couldn't respect me. Anyone loved by the old court was bound to be cruel to someone like me. But he had been a courtier, and that usually meant he'd at least be slightly subtle in his mockery. Apparently, I wasn't even worth that. But the quicker I asked him the necessary questions, the quicker he could leave.
"I wanted to talk to you about the night of the murders. I want you to tell me everything you saw."
"And why would you want to know that?"
He couldn't be serious. "Because someone murdered everyone in the old court. I want to find out who."
"And you think it might have been me?"
I spun to face him. He still stood casually, but his expression was a little more focused now, a little more intense.
"I didn't say that." "No, but you meant it. I grew up in court, Freya. I know how to read people. And you have the least subtlety of anyone I've ever met."
"What happened to calling me Your Majesty?
I think we're on a first-name basis once you start indirectly accusing me of murder."
Something about his expression had changed. He looked less polished now, a rawness bursting through. I felt a stab of guilt.
"I didn't accuse you of murder. I need to know what happened."
He stepped closer.
"You don't know me, so I'll say this clearly. Almost everyone I knew died at that banquet. My father, my friends, and you think there's a chance that I killed them."
"Anyone could have killed them. And the king was angry with you at the banquet."
"My father was angry with me at least half the time. He was angry I existed half the time.
That doesn't mean I killed him and everyone I knew."
"I know."
And I remembered how he had looked the morning after the banquet, when I bumped into him on the stairs. He looked broken. But a person could still murder and feel bad about it, couldn't they? If they thought it needed to be done? "Why was he angry with you?"
"I don't know. My father was too important to actually tell you why he was angry. You were just supposed to figure it out. It was lucky that he changed his mind easily enough, too."
I'd never really thought about it before. I knew the king had fallen out with Fitzroy on a near-weekly basis, but it had just been a fact of the court. Nothing that actually affected people. It was strangely uncomfortable to look at Fitzroy now, to see him as a person, not a figure at court.
"So, what did you see at the banquet?"
He sighed, then leaned against the countertop. The move seemed like the final drop of his courtly armor. When he spoke again, his voice was a little lower, a little rougher.
"I was there, although I didn't eat much. Whatever had upset my father, he wanted to make a point of it, because he wasn't exactly sending the choicest foods to me."
"Your father made you come onto the dais for the fire eaters."
"He did. I survived. I sat back down, things went on. Until the end of the feast."
"With the cake?"
"Yes, with the cake. Every part of it was gold, so obviously he wasn't going to waste any on me. He wanted to make a point. So everyone around me got a piece, and I got plain sponge. Just plain. Everyone commented on it, so I made some stupid joke. Acted like the plain sponge was the real prize, since no one else had it."
"Were you upset?" There was something about this rawer, quieter Fitzroy that made me shift closer. He was compelling, almost magnetizing. All the things his usual persona tried so hard to be, succeeded in being, for everyone but me.
"Was I upset? A bit, I guess. But I'm used to it. That's just my life, isn't it? Or it was. and it turned out I was lucky. Gerald was next to me, acting completely normal, and then he started coughing, acting like he couldn't breathe. I asked him if he was all right, and he turned away and threw up. And before I could even react to that, everyone else around me started reacting too. All at once? No, he said, a little quieter. Not all at once. That was the most frightening thing. A lot of people fell ill at the same time, but people kept getting ill. Everyone was terrified, pushing and shoving to get out of the hall, as though the outside would save them. I closed my eyes, heart pounding. I could picture every breath of it. I didn't want to, tried to shove the images away, but they burst to life before my eyes. All the faces I'd seen for years, the golden plates clattering on the floor, the terror of it. I'm sorry. Fitzroy swallowed. People didn't know. They felt dizzy or felt sick, and they thought it was poison, so they panicked. But it could have been panic making some of them unwell. We didn't know. How did you feel? I was watching everyone I knew suffer and die. How do you think I felt? I flinched. I'm trying to understand.
So am I, Fitzroy said. I didn't know what to do.
You think if something terrible happened, you'd do the right thing. Maybe not be the hero, but do something?
I just stood there, gaping. Then the guards grabbed me and hauled me out of the palace.
Why?
Why was I such an idiot? Or why did the guards grab me?
You aren't an idiot. I'd called him that in my head 100 times, but one brief conversation with him was enough to prove that wasn't true. It had never been true. He was... I wasn't sure what he was, but he wasn't an idiot. I mean, why did the guards...
I guess they thought I might be king, with my father dead.
So there had been at least some movement toward crowning Fitzroy that night. Some assumptions.
Did you want to be king?
What then? He laughed. It was a painful sound.
It was pretty much the last thing on my mind.
I couldn't bear to look at him. I fixed my eyes on the floor, breathing in and out. I'm sorry, I said. About your father. Silence. Then,
at least I survived. That's more than most people can say from that night.
Yes, I suppose it is. My hands shook, and I felt an unexpected urge to comfort Fitzroy. Instead, I said, you're being very honest with me.
Isn't that what you want?
Yes, but I didn't know how to explain it. I didn't really expect you to be. I thought you'd laugh at me.
You are the queen.
That didn't stop you from mocking me earlier. I didn't mean... He ran his hand through his hair again. The gesture made him look vulnerable. Far softer than the laughing, boisterous Fitzroy I was used to seeing at court. I was just being ridiculous, Freya. I make jokes. It's how I survive.
How you survive?
That was a bit melodramatic. Of course! I was a threat to pretty much everybody there. I still am, I guess. So I had to make people like me. You didn't consider just being nice? I didn't mean to attack him, but the questions poured out of me, demanding to be answered. Nice? In this court? Not for me. People would think I was weak and tear me apart, or think I was being manipulative and tear me apart.
So you make fun of them instead?
He sighed. I didn't mean to make fun of you. I was just... It's awkward, all right? All of this is awkward. I thought you would laugh, but you didn't, and I'm sorry.
It was a strange feeling, to believe him.
Is that why you were honest with me? Because you felt guilty? I don't...
Another sigh, definitely frustrated now.
I don't know where you got your opinion of me, Freya, but it's not true. I was honest with you because I have nothing to hide. I've seen you over the past few days. You seem honest. I'm not sure that's such a good thing, from your perspective, but I trust you. I don't know. Something about you makes me want to trust you.
And you think I should trust you?
You probably shouldn't. I am the last king's son, after all.
The words should have been another one of his jokes, but his tone didn't change.
Not really one that counts, but I'm sure your advisors will be quick to tell you how much of a threat I am. Just try not to cut my head off, all right? I rather like it where it is.
Still no change in tone. I shivered. I'm not cutting off anyone's head.
I'll take that as a promise.
He turned away, stepping toward the middle of the room. The tension between us snapped, leaving the ground unsteady underneath me.
"Here's why you can trust me, Freya," he said. For all my father's spontaneous sulks, he was in the middle of legitimizing me. He wanted to make me his heir. If he hadn't died, I would have been the next king. Even if you think me ruthless enough to kill my father and everyone at court for the sake of my own ambition, even then, it couldn't have been me. I would have been king. I would have been accepted here, surrounded by everyone I care about, and now I'm not. I'm not your murderer, Freya. And if you find them, let me know. I'd like to be there to skin them myself.
He gave me a little smile and a casual tilt of his head, as though that were a joke, too. Nothing serious meant at all. But the strain in his shoulders ruined the illusion. He might not actually be willing to murder the person responsible, but he wasn't entirely joking, either.
I will,
I said. Don't worry about that. I wanted to say something else, something more, but I didn't know what. It felt like something significant should follow, but instead the silence hovered between us, waiting to be broken. Part of me wanted to continue the conversation, to draw it out, to dwell in the rawness of it. But my hands were still shaking, and my heart was beating too fast. It felt dangerous, all of this, far too open. Thank you, I said, for coming here, for answering my questions. He nodded.
It was my pleasure. I mean, without the pleasure, but still.
He stared at me for a long moment.
I hope your investigations come to something, Freya. Try and survive until then.
13. I felt on edge for the rest of the day. I was confident I could cross Fitzroy off my list of suspects after that conversation, but I was even more confused and uncertain than I had been before I'd summoned him. I tried to organize my possessions as they arrived in the lab, but it was almost as if his piercing blue eyes were still watching me from across the room. I could still feel his rawness filling the air. Shame swirled in my stomach as I worked. I'd always thought Fitzroy was a fool, but I had never paused to think that it might all be an act, that there might be something more substantial underneath. I'd never even really thought of him as a person. First Madeline Wolfe, now William Fitzroy. Was it the murders that had brought out these sides in people, or had they always been there, lurking underneath the court's gold veneer all along? What did that say about my observation skills, if I'd never noticed? What did it say about me as a person, if I'd never cared to try? Naomi slipped into the lab in the afternoon, but she was no closer to getting her hands on a copy of the book. It would be too dangerous to let people know about her search, considering all that had happened. And although Naomi was brave, she wasn't stupid. She'd spoken to as many people as she could find without raising suspicion, turning the conversation to the Gustavites, using flattery to convince the older members of the court to explain the problems to her again and again, teasing out each person's beliefs. The survivors of the banquet had been more reticent, she said, but many nobles had begun to arrive for the funerals, and to many of them, the situation was more a source of gossip than one of grief. Everyone I spoke to thought the Gustavites were stupid, though, Naomi said, curling her toes around the slats of her stool. No one seemed to support them, but I suppose they wouldn't want to give that away, would they? I suppose not. After my encounter with Fitzroy, I was wary of dealing with people again. They were too unpredictable. I longed for science, clear, indisputable,
easy-to-understand science. Let's work on the poison test, I said to Naomi, shuffling our piles of notes aside.